It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Very interesting day here at the White House. They came with different stories, but they certainly all spoke with a unified voice. We're talking about victims' families, law enforcement officers, and administration officials all agreeing the time to act on immigration reform is now.
We've lost everything. He was my only child. I want some action. If this would have been done years ago, my son would still be here.
In welcoming to the White House victims of crimes perpetrated by illegal immigrants, the president today pivoted from the bruising health care battle back to one of his key campaign promises, fixing America's broken immigration system.
Your voices were heard all across the entire world, right? You better believe it. Nobody died in vain, I can tell you.
The gathering, the backdrop of the administration's bid to boost two bills that the House is expected to pass tomorrow before lawmakers leave for the July 4th break. The bills are aimed separately at thwarting so-called sanctuary cities that refuse to cooperate with federal officials on immigration and imposing tougher penalties against deported criminals who re-enter the U.S. The latter, known as Kate's Law, named after Kate Steinle, who was fatally shot back in 2015 while walking with her father along San Francisco's waterfront. The suspect, Juan Francisco Lopez Sanchez, had 7 previous felony convictions and had been deported to Mexico on 5 separate occasions.
The message I'm trying to send is we got to dispel this notion that you can violate the laws of this country and hide. And that's okay.
House Democratic leaders are expected to encourage their members to oppose the crackdown on sanctuary cities, but apply less pressure on Kate's Law. House Minority Whip Steny Hoyer telling reporters, I'm advising members to look at it carefully and see what their conclusion is.
We are finally going to defend our borders.
All right, Sandy Rios with you, coming to you live from the Phoenix Park Hotel here in downtown Washington, D.C. I'm not sure when they scheduled Radio Row several months ago. This is the 11th annual scheduled Radio Row sponsored by the Federation for American Immigration Reform, that they had any idea there would be so much news concurrent with it. So it's just a kind of good luck for all of us on radio. There's probably 60 hosts here, radio hosts, you know, getting the message out to people about what's going on in Capitol Hill. Well, somebody who's been getting this message out for a long time, really one of my favorites, but honestly, I've never met her face-to-face. You know Mark Kerkorian, because Mark is on the show often and is a good friend, but he is the director of Center for Immigration Studies. Jessica is the director of Policy Studies, and she writes the long papers and does the research, and she is a champion to me. And Jessica, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be with you in person.
Yeah, me too. And so let me just say, Jessica is a serious writer. Her stuff has appeared in the Washington Post, the Boston Globe, The Economist, The National Interest. We could go on and on with her, the list. She's also testified before Congress. So Jessica, given that you're really an expert on all things immigration and illegal immigration, let me ask you, first and foremost, what you think about the bills that are going to be introduced. The House is supposed to vote for them either today or tomorrow, that were mentioned in that report by Kevin Cork. Good,
yes,
or bad?
Oh, very good. Very good. Certainly there are many things wrong with our immigration system today, starting with, you know, enforcement of the laws that we have. But these two bills are so important in addressing one of the most urgent problems, which is sanctuary jurisdictions. The jurisdictions around the country that are trying to undermine federal immigration law, trying to undermine the president's enforcement of federal immigration laws and really nullify them. And the result is that they are protecting criminal aliens who ICE is trying to deport and sending them back to the streets of our communities instead of back to their home country. And it's going to take federal action to solve this problem and to protect all of us. There's a human cost to these sanctuary policies, and it's about time that our lawmakers did something about it. I expect the House of Representatives to pass this bill. It was introduced by Bob Goodlatte, who's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, very strong on immigration. We expect the House to pass it. Then it's got to go over to the Senate.
What do we expect at the Senate?
That's a very good question. That's what we need to find out. I think the American people deserve to see whether senators are going to vote to protect criminal aliens or vote to protect our country from their acts. And this is one of those litmus test votes that will tell the public, what they're going to do and expose it, shine a light on it. And this is a very important vote coming up. We're going to see how House Republican leadership handles it. We're going to see how those few how Senate Republican leadership handles it, how those few senators like John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Jeff Flake, and Tom Tillis from North Carolina, what they're going to do, and what, importantly, what Democrats are going to do. Do they dare vote against something like this? So I think we need to know.
I was just shocked, honestly. When Kate Steinle was murdered in that way on the pier, they know exactly who did it. Her parents were present. It was such a tragedy, and so little was made of it, from my perspective, except Bill O'Reilly and a few others. Fox talked about it, but it was like a yawn to the rest of the media.
Except for
Donald Trump. Yes. So this bill then addresses sanctuary cities. Well, when we think of sanctuary cities, it's noisy in here, isn't it? We think of San Francisco, Chicago, that's my hometown. We think of Austin, Texas. We think of areas in the East, and they're making a lot of noise saying they're not going to comply with any laws. And there's been discussion of removing funds from them. Where are we with that? Can the president withhold federal dollars and grants, et cetera, from these cities for refusing to comply with the law?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, also happening this week is the deadline for an initiative that was undertaken by Representative John Culberson from Texas, who is the chair of the House Appropriations Subcommittee that controls the budget of the Department of Justice. Last year, after the Kate Steinle tragedy, he said, this is ridiculous. These jurisdictions like San Francisco cannot continue to get federal law enforcement dollars if they're going to do this. So he forced former Attorney General Loretta Lynch into agreeing that it's against federal law to have a sanctuary policy, and said, you've got to start withholding their money from the Department of Justice.
And he says this to Loretta Lynch.
Yes, he says, if you don't, I'm going after your budget. So she had no choice. She agreed. Last year, they identified the 10 worst sanctuary jurisdictions, sent them a letter and said, if you don't change your policy by June 30th, 2017, which is this week, you are going to lose millions of dollars in federal funding. And it turned out that these 10 sanctuaries were soaking up two-thirds of all the federal law enforcement grants that come out of DOJ. In response to that action, Miami-Dade County in Florida, and now Orleans County, and I think Clark County, which is Las Vegas, Nevada, have all changed their policy. So now, but
to comply with the law, you mean?
Yes,
the law, the actual law.
Yeah, and guess what? Going after federal funding, that works. That makes people change. But there's this game of chicken going on between New York City, Chicago, Philadelphia,
Los Angeles,
this
maybe?
Entire state of California is a sanctuary. Yeah. This entire state of Connecticut, they're all strutting around saying, "Well, you can't do this." They're betting that no one's going to go through with it. So I'm waiting eagerly to hear what happens when we hit this deadline
June
at the
30th.
End of the week. Are they going to, because the way he said it, Mr. Culberson set it up, is he said, you're going to lose your 2016 grants. Like, you have to write a check back to the U.S. taxpayers for the money we gave you while you're kind of in, they had to give them time to change the policies, because these are political decisions that are made. Much as sheriffs and police around the country want to cooperate with ICE, it's the politicians who impose these sanctuary policies on them. But they're the ones who are going to lose the money. So it's going to be real interesting to see what happens. And the Ninth Circuit judge who ruled on this executive order on sanctuaries from President Trump, it was covered in the media that this was a victory for the sanctuaries, that, you know, Uncle Sam can't take our money. In fact, the paragraph at the end of that ruling said, but the initiative that's already underway to withhold the law enforcement grants from DOJ is perfectly legal. People didn't focus on it. So this is, you know, that was vindication of Mr. Culberson's move last year to do this, and now we're going to see what happens.
Who actually has to enforce this? Because that's the problem. We're seeing a breakdown between what President Trump is saying and what his people, who are not really his people, are actually doing. So you think, who's going to be actually making this happen, removing the dollars?
My understanding is that the new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, fully supportive of withholding these funds. And in fact, the sanctuary bill that we just talked about would actually force the feds to withhold even more funds than were identified by Mr. Culberson, because his jurisdiction is limited. Wow. He's fully on board and ready to do this. And so I'm waiting to see it happen.
Wow.
I mean, this, you know, the power of the purse is real power.
Absolutely.
I think it's going to work. And, you know, the very worst that can happen is that New York and Chicago and all these places say, well, we don't, you know, we're not going to take your federal money. We want to be martyrs over this issue. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, but U.S. taxpayers are not going to subsidize your dangerous policy.
Right.
And DOJ has other tools at its disposal as well, like they can seek an injunction in federal court against these policies, or if the sanctuary bill passes, then there will be even more penalties that are possible, including the right for the family or a victim of someone who is harmed by a criminal alien who was released by a sanctuary policy. Now they can sue. Under Mr. Goodlatte's bill, they'll be able to sue over it.
And we have to say, Jessica, you and I are aware that there are so many, excuse me, it's early. I've actually been up a long time, but I've hardly talked to anybody, so here we go. Actually talked. We know that there are so many, there are dozens, I don't know if it's in the hundreds yet, of victims of illegal immigrant crime. Several of them
are
here.
Thousands of them. Yes, yeah. there are a number of them, about a dozen here at this event.
Yes, and they went to the White House yesterday and talked to the president. So it's not a small thing, and yet they were ignored. In the last administration, they were ignored, and now it's not a surprise, really. We're seeing CNN exposed, really, for what they are, and outlets like CNN just ignored those stories. And it's just amazing how they can shape people's minds. Like it's no big deal. It's a huge deal that cities are giving sanctuary to even criminals and refusing to export them. That's the wrong word. To deport them out of this country.
Unfortunately, crime is not a job Americans won't do. There is just no logical reason to allow people who are committing crimes here and who are here illegally to stay. It makes no sense whatsoever. And, you know, we need to enforce our immigration laws across the board for lots of reasons. Immigration law, it's not some obsolete thing that doesn't deserve to be enforced. We have to do it for lots of reasons. And we cannot allow state and local governments who are obstructing that for political reasons to get away with it.
Well, hurt our own people. Jessica, we had a lot of us had high hopes for President Trump because he led with that, really, on the campaign trail. I mean, there were lots of issues. Build that wall. You know, that was the mantra. All right, he made a lot of promises and offered a lot of things. We have Secretary Kelly heading Homeland Security. If you were to give the president, maybe not the president personally, but actually what's happened under his leadership, what grade would you give right now?
I would say A-. I'm very encouraged. It's been 150 days, and we've ended catch and release. He's pushing on the sanctuary bill. We're getting a pause in travel from the most dangerous countries in the world associated with terrorism. The only reason I say A-, is because he hasn't done anything. He's continued the program for the Dreamers.
Yeah. Jessica, the time is up and we need more time. So you and I'll have to talk again next time by phone. But Jessica Vaughn, again, Director of Policy Studies for the Center for Immigration Studies. And by the way, her stuff is so good. And I will be placing a lot of it on our Facebook as I see it come across the wire here. Jessica, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, coming up next, one of the Border Patrol agents will be joining us to talk about what's happening at the border. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters. Hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy here to help you understand God's purpose for your life through the eyes of a layman. Without purpose, there's hopelessness. Have you ever had a day when you question what life is all about, like you don't want to do it anymore, but you're trapped? That's hopelessness, and millions of people are right there, right now. Here's how you inject newness and excitement and purpose into every moment of your day. Assuming that you're a Christian, recognize that everything you're doing is moving everyone in your life closer or further away from God. When you see all of your responsibilities and health issues and challenges as opportunities to lead people closer to God, all the monotony in your life goes away. It changes everything. Everything has purpose. Circumstances should never destroy your testimony. They should define your testimony. That's when God puts your testimony on steroids and fills your days with joy. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everyone you're with today closer to Jesus. If you want to know how easy that is, go to ROTW.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Coe, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The last frontier has decided to ditch Columbus Day. Alaska Governor Bill Walker signed a bill into law declaring the day formally honoring Christopher Columbus as a day that will be known as Indigenous People Day. California, South Dakota, Tennessee, and most liberal cities in America currently have a state holiday honoring Indigenous peoples. It's been sort of a pet project for Governor Walker. He signed one-year proclamations in 2015 and 2016 after lawmakers failed to pass legislation. Native Alaskans are not so sure the proclamation will amount to all that much. Some elders believe the newcomers to Alaska should apologize for past transgressions. The governor bristles at the notion. He's tipping his hat to political correctness. He says Indigenous Peoples Day is meant to be inclusive rather than exclusive, unless, of course, your name happens to be Christopher Columbus. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
My only goal was to make sure he was laid to rest with honors. That honor has been insulted by cover-ups and deception by the very people he served.
Border Patrol agent Brian Terry died in December 2010, killed by guns tied to an Obama administration plan that armed Mexicans, a scandal officials tried to hide by wrongly claiming executive privilege.
The department's belated admission that those 64,000 pages were not privileged puts the gold seal of authenticity on the House's bipartisan vote to hold the Attorney General in contempt.
Emails contained in the House Oversight Committee's report show top officials knew the ATF sent guns to Mexico even before Terry's death. It's a tricky case given the number of guns that have walked, said a deputy attorney general. A colleague replied, it is not going to be any big surprise a bunch of U.S. guns are being used in Mexico, so I'm not sure how much grief we get for guns walking. Months later, two of those guns were used against Agent Terry, a fact denied to Congress and Terry's family.
Only one possible motivation remains for all of those involved who have covered up Fast and Furious. That is to conceal their own shame and disgrace.
Even the Border Patrol, which sent Terry's team into the desert, didn't know about the operation.
I believe that if Brian Terry and his team had known this information, chances are Brian would be alive today.
The report claims the administration tried to stop the investigation by discrediting whistleblower John Dodson.
I was lied about, disparaged, publicly attacked, ridiculed, libeled. I've been transferred 11 times, denied promotion, ostracized, barred from government workplaces, and banned from public buildings.
Lawmakers noted no one from the ATF or Justice Department was fired or seriously disciplined for the cover-up.
All right, that was William LaJeunesse earlier this month, and it just reminds us how big a price Border Patrol agents have paid under the leadership of Barack Obama and the feckless policies, the lack of enforcement, the lack of support by members of Congress. That's a shameful thing that happened to Brian Terry, and remember that the Attorney General was held in contempt of Congress for refusing to testify and withholding information. It is disgraceful, and Brian Terry did lose his life. Brandon Judd probably knows all about that and certainly knows what it's like to be on the other side of this. He's a Border Patrol agent, but he serves as president of the National Border Patrol Council, representing 16,500 Border Patrol line agents. Brandon, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, just a simple question. Is there a difference in morale among Border Patrol agents as a result of President Trump's election?
There's a buzz like I've never seen before in the 20 years that I've been in the Border Patrol. I'd like to comment a little bit on Brian Terry. I knew Brian Terry personally. He worked at the station that I worked at. We've got 160 some odd stations throughout the United States, and it's a very close-knit group when you work at the same station. When he was a trainee, I knew him. I worked with him at the checkpoints as a trainee. I had to train him a little bit. And to hear about that and then to see the cover-up that took place, it completely and totally devastated that entire station. In fact, the station is now named after Brian Terry. It was named the Naco Station before. It's now named the Brian Terry Memorial Station. And it was a tragedy. And the fact that Eric Holder was able to walk away from that scot-free and completely clean is a complete and total miscarriage of justice. But that's what we saw under the Obama administration. What we saw was an administration that thought that they were above the law, that they could do anything that they wanted. And frankly, they did.
And people were expendable, including Border Patrol agents.
They couldn't care less about our troops overseas. They couldn't care less about our law enforcement. They couldn't care less about the United States citizens and enforcing the laws. And in fact, you've got a lot of people here today that lost loved ones to illegal aliens. And you would think that President Obama would have done all in his power to protect United States citizens on U.S. soil from people from other countries that were in our country illegally, and he didn't. He did absolutely nothing.
We're hearing so many reports, Brandon, at the height of the out-of-control invasion of our border, you know, there were all these facilities being built, schools, housing. They were bringing medical care. They were giving them cell phones. They were building schools. And all of these so-called charities were making money hand over fist. Border Patrol agents were changing diapers and doing child care. What's happened with that?
Thank goodness that's all gone away. I've got to thank your listeners. You've got some very intelligent listeners. I've listened to you on the radio many times. You've got some very intelligent listeners, and thank goodness that people like them voted for somebody who was completely and totally off the cuff, that's a real person that speaks not in the political talk that we came to expect in the last 8 years. I do believe that President Trump is going to do all that he can to secure the border, and I'll tell you, we have the resources to do it. We've just never had the political will to do it.
All right, so then, seriously though, what is happening on the border now? I heard that traffic was down by 50%.
It's actually 60%.
60%.
So the rhetoric has worked, but we're in a honeymoon period, and we need to be very, very careful. What we have to do is we have to look at and say, okay, we've got some problems. And I'll give you an example. In Aravaca, Arizona, just a couple days ago, we had four illegal aliens that crossed the border. They were seen by our video surveillance. Border Patrol agents got on the... We call it sign. It's footprints in the dirt, in the ground. And we follow those footprints, and we try to catch up to these people. But the cameras, they had visual of these people. They were headed towards a camp that was run by a group called No Mas Muertes. They're an open border group. They advocate open borders, and it's okay to cross our borders illegally. And these four illegal aliens were headed towards the camp. The agents tracked the illegal aliens to the camp. When they got to the perimeter of the camp, they were met by members of No Mas Muerte, and they were not allowed entrance into the camp. Now, the agents could have gone into the camp because they had the probable cause, but supervisors told the agents to stand down. They said that they were going to get a warrant. No warrant was necessary. We didn't have to tie up the courts. We didn't have to go to a judge to get a warrant. We had the probable cause to go in the camp. For 2 days, we wasted resources by surrounding that camp, waiting for a warrant from an Obama holdover U.S. attorney. And those managers should have been disciplined for telling those agents not to do their job and wasting our resources. So, you know, this honeymoon period, this rhetoric from President Trump has done a great job in driving down the crossings, but the crossings are slowly starting to tick back up. And it's because we have the Obama holdovers and we've got to drain the DHS swamp.
Speaking of that, a politically impolitic question to ask you is Secretary Kelly. Yes. Uh-huh, what? Yeah. What name do I? Secretary Kelly. What do you think?
Well, unfortunately, Secretary Kelly is part of the problem that we're seeing in the uptick of illegal crossings. What he's doing is he's continuing to promote the Obama holdovers that were left in DHS. So when President Trump said, "I'm going to drain the swamp," Border Patrol agents were extremely excited. That's one of the reasons why we've never seen a buzz like there was on November 8th of 2016. But that buzz is quickly dying, because what we're seeing is Secretary Kelly promoting the Obama holdovers that were the main reason for the disaster that we had on the border. And so we've got to get Secretary Kelly to do the right thing.
Do you have the president's ear?
We do. We are able to communicate with the president. You know, not directly. You've got to understand that this is the most powerful man in the free world. I was able on the campaign. I was able to meet with the president on several occasions. Speak with the president on several occasions. But now that he's the president, that's a little bit different. But yes, we do. We are able to communicate with the White House. The president said that we would have a direct line to the White House, and we are able to communicate with the White House. So hopefully, we're very hopeful that Secretary Kelly will turn it around and change who he's hiring. If he doesn't, we're going to continue with this down the same path.
Yeah, I have to say, this is the problem across the board in almost every single agency. I can think of two exceptions. For instance, this is just a hot button, I don't want to get side-railed on this, but I have to say Sheriff David Clark was treated very badly by Homeland Security.
He was, and that's
embarrassed. It's disgraceful.
That's Secretary Kelly. That
yes.
is him. What he wants to be the star of the show. And he's, frankly, he's scared of anybody else that might be a rising star. And Sheriff Clark, who was fantastic. I mean, this guy's policies are great policies, and Secretary Kelly basically threw him to the curb.
I know that's true. So I'm just saying, and I wanted to, I actually don't think I've discussed it on the air. I was very involved in trying to do something about that, Brandon. I'm embarrassed about that. And it needs to go on record. It was Secretary Kelly.
It was.
And he was, after sticking his neck out and working for the president and alienating his own community as a black sheriff, talking about his black community.
Yes.
It's just, it's disgraceful. But Brandon, are Border Patrol agents unified, you think, now? Or do you have among your ranks, this is a silly question because I think I know the answer. You can't possibly be unified. They're not all Trump supporters, are they?
Well, not 100%, of course not. I mean, we have Border Patrol agents that are independents. We have Border Patrol agents that are Democrats. But the vast majority, you know, if you look at my council, 85% of Border Patrol agents are voluntary members of the National Border Patrol Council. I was elected to represent them. I've been a Border Patrol agent for 20 years. We have the highest voluntary membership rate in the entire federal government, which then tells you that, yes, these agents are behind President Trump, but support is beginning to wane because Secretary Kelly is not following through with those campaign promises, and that's going to be an issue.
Let's talk about the northern border. We know, most of us know a lot more about the southern border. It came to my mind in a big way when the policeman at the mall was stabbed in the neck. I think it was Minnesota.
It was.
Wasn't it?
It was.
By a jihadi who had come across the northern border.
Yes.
Now, I don't know the details of that, but what's the situation on the northern border?
It's not good. In fact, you know, water takes the path of least resistance. So do illegal aliens. As the price continues to rise for them to be smuggled across the southwest border, you're going to start seeing them going to Canada because Canada has very, very loose visa requirements to get into Canada. They'll give anybody a three-day visa. Which they can then work their way to the northern border and cross. And because we just don't have the agents, the manpower like what we have on the southwest border, it's going to be very easy for them to get across.
You know, I just read that Canada has taken in, it seemed to me it was in the thousands of jihadis that are leaving
yes.
the battlefield because we're turning up the burner
yes.
on the battlefield. So they're coming to Canada. And then, of course, where are they going to come?
They're going to come right across our northern border, and it's going to be very easy for them to get across. If you look at, I'm grateful for senators like Mike Crapo out of Idaho. They're calling, they're letting the public know that there is an issue on the northern border. And if we don't address that, we're going to be in a world of hurt. I mean, if you look at the terrorists that took down the towers on 9/11, most of them came across. They came legally, but they came through Canada into the United States through the northern border.
The wall. There's been such disparagement of the need for it. People who believe there's a need for a wall have been made silly. I've heard people, Republican senators and congressmen, poo-poo. They didn't. The Senate, actually, in the House, didn't give money for the wall.
They didn't.
They just didn't do that. They decided they were going to ignore the president and just not do it. So, but we do have to have an honest discussion. Is a wall necessary? Do you
it
think
is.
The wall?
It is. Okay. And let me give you an example. I'm going to point to the Brian Terry Memorial Station when it was called NACO. In 2002 to 2005, when I worked at that station, I was a canine handler at that time. We were arresting in that small little area. We're talking about 60 linear miles of border. That's it, 60 linear miles of the 2,000 on the southwest border. We were arresting 100,000 illegal aliens per year. That was pre a wall. We built a wall in that area. It went from 100,000 to now it's down to 3,000. So proof's in the pudding. It absolutely works. But what a wall does, and so let me see if I can paint a picture for your listeners. What a wall does is we put a wall up in the urban areas. We don't want illegal aliens to be able to run across the border and get into the urban areas, the city area, because that becomes much more difficult for us to catch them. What we want to do is we want to dictate where they cross the border illegally. And when we have walls, we get to create the funnel points, which then allows us to utilize our resources much better, where we become a lot more effective. Under President Obama, we were only arresting one out of every two illegal entrants that were coming across the border illegally. When we create these funnel points, when we dictate where the illegal crossings take place, we're going to be a lot more effective, which will then make this country a lot safer.
What about the catch and release that was so controversial? And as I understand it, okay, this is just from my memory, you're the expert. You were catching people coming across, but then you had to let them go and come back later for your court date, right?
So here's the process. When I arrest somebody that crosses the border illegally, you're going to hear the agency say apprehend. I hate that word because it waters down that what they did was they committed a crime.
Like instead of a matter, it's not
exactly,
an investigation, it's
exactly.
a matter.
We
yeah.
we arrest people.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
When we arrest people, you're supposed to take them into custody, you're supposed to do the processing, you're supposed to hold them until they see a judge. And then a judge is supposed to determine whether they're supposed to be deported back to their country or whether they can stay or whether he gives a stay of deportation for further to look into the matter further, depending upon what their claim is. they weren't seeing a judge. We were taking them into custody. We were processing them for hours. Then we were walking them right out our front door. Then they were going to Atlanta, Georgia, Florida.
Being handed their cell phones and their attorneys.
Bingo.
Yeah. So not happening now?
No, it is. And Secretary Kelly is continuing that. It's not happening in the Border Patrol, but ICE continues to release people.
Well, Brandon, you're a hero. And you're doing the work of, you're protecting our country in very tangible ways. And we thank you for that. Brandon Judd, president of the National Border Patrol Council. It's a never-ending fight, and we're going to keep fighting, right?
Appreciate your time, absolutely.
All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
Now an angel of the Lord said to Philip, "Rise and go toward the south, to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is a desert place." My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. At the height of a Holy Spirit outpouring in Samaria, where the gospel was being preached with great power and droves of people were converting to follow Christ, the Lord instructed Philip to leave Samaria and head south to Gaza. Philip didn't know a divine appointment awaited him. Through his ministry to the Ethiopian eunuch, the gospel would spread to Africa. He left the crowd to serve one. I call this step-down faith. It's easy to step up for the attention and applause of the masses, but do we have step-down faith?
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth
has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples
of all nations."
As believers, we're called to make disciples of all nations. This is Bert Harper. Join me for Exploring Missions, revealing the hearts of missionaries, their stories, and lives. Across the world or across town, Exploring Missions, Sunday afternoons at 1 Central on American Family Radio.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
A boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. That is a highlight of our tour of the Holy Land when we go on the boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. A special time to be on the very water where Jesus walked, where he spent time with his disciples. And you know, in fact, you're the place where Jesus was. So many sites we're going to see in the Holy Land that are just like that. We know Jesus was here. The trip is in March, March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love for you to come with us. So many places we're going to see, you've read about since you were a child. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to you in the mail, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, extension 5.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Candidate Donald Trump promised to stop importing jihadists and others who don't share our values. His administration is cleared to implement a partial immigration pause meant as a first step towards devising and implementing techniques to keep such people out, but permit entry for those seeking to embrace and join in safeguarding our constitutional freedoms. Lawmakers in Maine are currently wrestling with one of the more horrific manifestations of distinctly anti-American values, the practice known as female genital mutilation. The Centers for Disease Control estimate that over 500,000 girls and women in this country have already had their genitals mutilated or are still at risk of being involuntarily disfigured in this fashion, including some now living in refugee communities in Maine. FGM is a federal felony offense. Maine should once again lead the nation by making it a state-level crime as well. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy
Having
Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. And we are coming to you again from the 11th annual Hold Their Feet to the Fire Radio Row. I've been here all 11 years. I've worked with FAIR all of this time, and they are real champions. They put a lot of money into informing the United States people, as citizens like you, about what's going on in immigration. They've been a great resource of reliable information, and so I'm grateful to them. And it's a great place to be today, because we have people on the front lines of this issue. And a new face to me is Elena Maria Lopez. Elena has a very different story, and it reminds me, Elena, we were just talking, there was a movie with Gerard Depardieu that I just loved.
Green Card.
Long time ago, 20 years ago probably.
Right.
And it's about this Frenchman, this boorish Frenchman who wants to get married in order to become a citizen. And it's about how they try to show that they're, you know, they make it a love story, but it was very interesting and very entertaining and enjoyable. But there is a great deal of fraud is going on in that area where people want citizenship by marrying American citizens, and you know a lot about that, right?
Right, because marriage is the most common way to get a green card or to get legal residency in the United States. Otherwise, you have to show special skills that, you know, many U.S. citizens don't have, or you have to show that you have been politically or religiously persecuted in your home country. And if you can't, the quickest way to get a green card is marriage. And it's the easiest and most common, and the fraud rates are high. And it's always written out as like a kind of, like in the movie Green Card, like a victimless crime. It never is, really.
Why? Who does it hurt?
It hurts the citizen. It hurts the country, because what happens is the country, is they set up incentives to bring in spouses of American citizens. And my ex-husband came in without a background check. And if you're not properly vetting, that's why I laugh every time they talk about extreme vetting. I'm like, where? I'd love to see some extreme vetting in the immigration process. He came in without any kind of background check because he was marrying a U.S. citizen.
And that was you?
Yes. I was born and raised here. And I fell in love, and I thought I, you know, found the love of my life. And he proposed to me, and I sponsored him in through a fiancé visa and then married him. And then the night before our second anniversary, he just coldly announces, we're getting a divorce, you're moving out, and I just married you for a green card. And I was horrified. Because you make life decisions based on being married. You know, I took work out of my field, I supported him. There was a lot of money involved to start the paperwork. And there's a lot of emotional commitment as well.
Well, yeah, like an understatement. I don't think you even have to describe.
Exactly.
I'm just sitting here just thinking how stinging in every way, how shattering and how confusing, because marriage is a serious business to most of us.
And especially since it was literally like a light switch went off on our second anniversary. And so I said, okay, I've obviously been used. And so I filed for a marriage fraud annulment, not a divorce. And I said I'd no longer be his immigration sponsor. And he became violent, and he tried to strangle me. A week later, after I had fled my home, I went home to pack my belongings. He came home early with a gun, and he attacked me at gunpoint. And his change of behavior was so abrupt, I said, did I ever really know this person? And it turns out I didn't. I thought I had properly vetted him, as well as the government, and neither one of us had.
Elena, just to kind of go into that a little bit more, did you meet him out of country or in country?
I met him while he was traveling in the U.S. on business, and I met him through a friend. So it felt like a safe meeting, and like he, you know, it was in a safe environment. I didn't need to meet him on the internet. We had dated for 9 months before he even proposed. It took a year and a half before I actually married him, because I wanted to make sure it was the real deal.
And what country?
He was from the Netherlands.
Exactly. Oh, so you don't have his name. This is not his name.
I never took his name because I'm a writer, so I kept my last name.
Okay. All right, so he was from the Netherlands?
He's from the Netherlands.
Who, you know, like the unlikely suspect, at least, also making it confusing. Why would someone from the Netherlands have to falsify? Well, I guess, you know, people from Europe are having trouble getting in the country. They're having trouble getting in legally.
Well,
for citizenship.
Yes, and that is
that's
true.
What I mean.
It goes to the same
travel.
Thing. Unless you have special job skills or you can show that you're persecuted in your home country, which is not the case in the Netherlands, you have to marry your way in.
Was he Dutch then?
He
by
was
birth?
Dutch. He was a tall Dutch white guy.
Well, without getting too personal with you, because I don't know if that's part of the story that you actually want to tell. I don't know. What was his purpose and plan? What was he a criminal?
Actually, he was. And that's it. Okay. He had that when I started, my case was so bad. And by the way, the Immigration Service says we see cases like this all the time. You've been married for 2 years. There's nothing we can do. And meanwhile, I'm still fleeing my home. I can't go to my own home to even pack. I'm terrified. And I hired a retired FBI agent as a private investigator. And we found a whole slew of criminal activities. We found out he should have been barred from coming into the country in the first place. We found out he lied on his visa to get here, his green card application. Separate from his violence toward me, I found an ex-wife that had to flee to Spain because some of these same types of things were happening. And the Immigration Service still didn't care. And his parting words to me were, "They won't believe you, Elena. They'll believe me because I'm clean cut, have a good job, and I'm Dutch, not Arab." And those were his parting words to me.
Well, that's cheerful, loving, lovely. Yeah. All right, so this story is so not prototypical, you know. You're Hispanic.
Right.
You marry a Dutchman, and he's the guy who wants to come in illegally. It's just very interesting. So this happened in what year?
It started happening in 2002, and I'm actually still in hiding. I've been warned last year by the Department of Homeland Security that I married a dangerous man and sponsored a dangerous man into the country. In 2016, they told me this.
Is he still in the States?
He's still here. He got his green card.
So they get, okay, the point is they let him stay and they did nothing.
Knowing how
he threatened you.
The only thing they did was they warned me that I needed to protect myself from a dangerous man, but they admitted that they will not investigate his green card status or deport him.
You ended up testifying before Congress about your personal circumstances?
I did. And by the way, to testify before Congress, you have to go like through 6 weeks of vetting, and they have direct access to immigration files to make sure that what you're saying is really legitimate. So Senator Grassley was appalled when he saw my case, and he point blank said, "What are you guys going to do with this? Why is he still here and Elena is in hiding? I live like an illegal immigrant. The state of New Jersey took my case so seriously that they set up, they put me in the equivalent of a witness protection program for domestic violence victims in serious danger."
Why isn't anyone deporting him? Is he not convicted of any crime? Is it just this terrible behavior that you know about but no convictions?
No, because I could never get the Immigration Service. They don't care about, in terms of the United States, he has no convictions, but I also couldn't get anybody to prosecute any of these crimes. They just let him slip under the rug. So he's still living here openly and freely, and I'm in hiding. The U.S. citizen that is in danger is in hiding, and the foreign national that's a violent criminal is running free with a green card.
All right, so when did you testify before Congress?
This past March.
All right, so since Trump has been elected, look, we've already discussed before you joined me, I know this because I work here, that a lot of things have not changed under the Trump administration because of the people under him. So you're still caught in the same trap that was in place when Obama was president. You've got bad people.
Correct.
Who are not doing their jobs.
And bad laws.
Yeah, so do you have a champion then? You think Senator Grassley, do you have a champion I don't even know if you want to say your home state because...
I say my home state, but I cannot say my home district.
Yeah, okay.
I live in New Jersey, but okay. I can't identify my congressional district,
yeah,
which is pretty sad. I can't get Senator Menendez or Senator Booker's office to return my calls or my email. Even when I stop by, I can't really get serious interviews with them. Senator Grassley from Iowa, the chairman of Judiciary Committee, has been a big champion of ours.
This is disgraceful. It really is. All right, so what is your own personal situation is bad enough, but then the overarching thing, do you think the laws need to be changed? Are the laws good? They're just not being enforced, or should something be changed?
The laws are horrible. And they're also, the existing laws are not being enforced. But what happens as soon as somebody marries an American, the American is almost stripped out of the process, even if we're able to clearly identify fraud or criminal activities. So the laws need to be changed, and we also need to create a longer marriage requirement, because the two-year marriage requirement was created in 1986 after they found out that a third of all green card marriages were fraudulent.
So specify what you mean by the two-year marriage requirement.
You have to be married for 2 years. Until then, you have like almost like this conditional temporary status, and then literally on the day of your second anniversary, you're pretty much home free. It doesn't matter.
Meaning the formerly not citizens home free in the sense that they get to stay permanently.
They get to stay permanently. It doesn't matter what criminal activity you find.
Aren't they generally granted citizenship? Is it after 2 years? How does that work?
Overall, they have to wait 5 years for citizenship for a green card marriage. And that's also the fastest way for citizenship. So there's an incentive to marry somebody. And even worse, there's laws that if you claim that somebody emotionally or physically abused you, you can get even faster status. The reason why that's problematic is because there's no credible evidence required. Either the American spouse is not interviewed, the American spouse and the American spouse's family is barred from submitting evidence in the immigration process.
Are you kidding? Now, wait a second.
There's
a
lack
of statute? Is that by statute?
That is by law.
How can that be?
It sounded like it. Because what happened was a lot of domestic violence organizations wrote the legislation.
Uh-huh.
And this is, I'm actually a domestic violence victim. My mother used to run the domestic violence shelters in the county. So I understand the importance of good domestic laws, domestic violence laws and protections. But to just issue a domestic violence green card without a level of due process, which involves interviewing both parties, looking at the evidence, looking at the credibility, especially when there's an incentive to cry wolf, is downright disturbing. And when we actually lobbied to change that in 2011, 12, and 13 as part of the Violence Against Women Act, we were labeled as anti-female, xenophobic, and anti-immigrant.
The Violence Against Women Act is terrible on so many levels. I can't even get into that. That's why, you know, they always give them great names, but they actually do often the opposite of what their names claim.
Right.
I'm guessing, Atlanta, because you are a writer and because this has been your nightmare experience, that
right.
You know of other cases. Are there other examples?
Far too many other. Because when I started, the reason why I started immigrationfraud.com is because I wanted to help people learn from my mistakes. At the time, there was nothing out there to help people like me, unless you were going to, you know, sort through dry congressional testimony and legal documents. And I started tracking cases, including disturbing national security cases where people from one country of origin, you start seeing patterns, and you start seeing people from only one country of origin doing quick domestic violence green cards, and then they do things like they quickly remarry active military with high-level security clearances, often living on bases. And you start seeing disturbing patterns, and I've warned high-level congressional members and bureaucrats about this in 2013 and 2014, and it's still happening.
You know what we need to do? I need to get the most recent information you have. We need to put it on our Facebook page.
Okay.
And also a link to your immigrationfraud.com.
Okay.
Because I'm confident there are people listening who you know, are contemplating marriage. I mean, it's not that you can't ever marry someone who's not an American citizen, but what would you do differently, and what advice would you give if there's a girl or a guy out there who's dating someone who's not in country? What would you suggest they do to make sure?
Well, you have to vet, and I think that if the Immigration Service was honest about the high rates of fraud, we would know what to look out for. But then the other thing is, are they too quick to marry? Are they overly charming? And not just with you, but your family members, because they're really trying to woo all of you guys. So that when I was thinking about not getting married, it was my family that said, take the risk if you love him. You know, so that's part of the con, is they want to pull in your whole family. Offer to move to their country. I love you. Let's go back to Guatemala or Turkey or Germany. Sure, I'll marry you there. See if they're open to that kind of stuff.
Wow. And you know, when you're in a situation like that, you're in love and you want to believe the best. You don't want to ask those hard questions, and you feel like a betrayer by setting them up like that. But honestly,
right.
We have to be, you know, operate with our minds and not just our hearts.
Right.
Elena, it's been a pleasure. I'm so
glad you
happened along here, Elena Maria Lopez. We wish you the very best. And if there's anything we can do to help in the future, let us know.
Start paying attention and start supporting legislation.
That sounds like a good thing to do.
Thank you.
All right, Elena, thank you so much. Sandy Rios, coming to you live again from Phoenix Park Hotel. Hold their feet to the fire. Be back tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.